Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through the underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. A comprehensive analysis published in 2014 found that PTSD among male and female soldiers aged 18 or older returning from Iraq and Afghanistan rates from 9% shortly after returning from deployment to 31% a year later. Many veterans of wars have difficulty transitioning from military service to a fully productive life as a civilian. A Way Back Home, a program provided by Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans, is a guided journey of reckoning and reconciliation between veterans and civilians. This non-sectarian journey provides a ritual-based healing of wounds of PTSD based on ancient wisdom and traditions. And my guests today are going to be talking about that journey for a lot of veterans and this particular program. First, my guest is Dr. Mike Cicinato. Father Michael Cicinato. He's a chaplain for Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans and author of Healing Journey Coordinator and author of the Healing Journey Program.
Yes, co-author with my partner, Peter Sternberg.
Yes, and Peter is actually joining us today. Peter is the co-author of the Healing Journey process and a psychotherapist in private practice in Chicago. And thank you, Peter, for joining us from Chicago today by phone.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good to have you. And Pete Pepper, who is the director of Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans, is here.
Good to be here, Christine.
And finally, we have Bob Denny, who is a veteran participant in the program. And it's good to have you, too.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen, I think probably the place to start kind of as a baseline is, you know, the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury and other kinds of injuries that veterans are returning from deployment with. What exactly are we looking at here?
Well, you cited the statistics, and it's interesting that once a soldier gets out of the combat zone, there's a certain incidence or certain frequency of PTSD symptomology, but then it worsens the longer they're away from the zone, as your statistics indicated.
Yeah, I mean, it jumped up 300% by the one-year mark.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we're looking at veterans that go back as far as the Korean War, of course, the Vietnam War, and any time that American forces have been deployed in defense of our nation. And what we find is even if a person hasn't been in active combat, there is still a probability or incidence of statistical significant incidence of PTSD. And what we have experienced as a society is these veterans come back, and those symptoms manifest themselves in a variety of different ways. Sometimes they self-medicate with a variety of substances, legal or illegal. Their home life situation frequently deteriorates, so the divorce rate ratchets up very quickly. You have problems that where they get into trouble with the law as a result of those things. And in 2008, that difficulty was recognized by the establishment of the first Veterans Treatment Court in upstate New York. Since then, there have been over 300 vet courts established in the U.S. We started ours almost 3 years ago in San Luis Obispo County. And principally what we do is we develop a treatment regimen to analyze and make sure that the veteran and their military service has a nexus between that service and the criminal problem they experience. Once that's established, then we devise a treatment program that lasts a year to 18 months, and it's composed of a variety of things that the VA provides, that the county provides, treatment therapy, we treat the if there is a dependency on a drug. We treat that issue, and we also assign a mentor who is a veteran who can walk with them through that entire process, someone who's informed about what it was like to come back.
So when you're talking about the nexus, just to explain that, there's a relationship between the behaviors that have gotten them into court and their military service.
There must be.
There must be.
So it's not a free ride for any mm-hmm. veteran who might mm-hmm. have served and had a problem.
And it's not
with
a
the
way
law.
To hide from no. responsibility.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
In fact, in order to get into the program in the vet court, you have to plead guilty or no contest to whatever charge you're facing. So, and you have to sign a contract and comply with the contract requirements. So it's very stringent. It's in no way considered a free ride. What it is a way to treat an issue that was caused by their diligence to our nation, by their service to our nation. We feel we have an obligation.
And how are those veterans identified? How do they come forward into the court? Are they coming in through the system, and the system has a screening process for
yes,
them?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Yeah, a variety of ways. Some uh-huh. defense attorneys will refer them.
Okay.
Probation officers will refer them. Deputy DAs will refer them. If they run across a person involved in a criminal problem and they happen to be a veteran, then that's the beginning of a due diligence
okay.
process.
Okay, so that's a question that's asked, and it kind mm-hmm. of then goes to the next step from
yes,
there.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. And if you joined us just now, we're talking about how to assist veterans and civilians in healing of moral and ethical issues associated with post-traumatic stress disorder. We are talking with Father Michael Cicinato, who is a chaplain for Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans and co-author of Healing Journey Process. And online with us on the phone is Peter Sternberg, who is in private practice as a psychotherapist in Chicago and also co-author of The Healing Journey Process. Pete Pepper, whose voice you just heard, is the director of Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans. And then also with me in the studio is Bob Denny, who's a veteran participant. Our show is live, and I do want to invite you to join our conversation today with your comments or questions by calling 781-3875. So from the court, then, as a baseline, and understanding that these issues existed for veterans, and there's a direct correlation mm-hmm. between the behaviors and the issues, what was the next step for you, Father Mike?
Well, I was very much and involved with the court thing. I went back to a program and met Judge Russell, who was the founder, in a program called When Johnny Comes Marching Home, Now He's in Jail, What's That All About? And got some real insights from him. But from that, in working with this, with my partner Pete here and with Peter and others, Dr. Ed Tick, who's renowned for this, whose book War on the Soul, we came to redefine PTSD as post-traumatic soul distress. Mm. And we see the wound as a soul wound. Now, in other words, it occurs when there's a moral injury combined with isolation from society, okay? Mm-hmm. The very training that we do of necessity to make a good soldier, who can fight, keep himself safe and his fellow soldiers safe, you have to do some separation. You have to allow a dehumanization of the enemy. You have to increase the ability to kill, which goes against our nature. Those are the things that affect our souls, mm-hmm. our basic humanity. And we see, okay, that moral injury there's a place for healing for that and a way to heal that with reentry. But we also realize that the civilian society, we need to own responsibility for what we have asked our soldiers to do, for how we've trained them, for what they have to do in our name. Whether we agree with war or not, mm-hmm. as a citizen, mm-hmm. these people go and serve in our name and die and self-sacrifice. We have a moral responsibility to own that ourselves and to walk a journey of healing with them. And we bring them back. We use the term bringing them back into elder warriors, okay, which is a wisdom piece. It's based on a lot of ancient traditions. But when elder warriors, warriors that were returned, and the civilians heard the stories and owned them, and the healing process worked, the elder warriors became wisdom people, but also violence in the community dropped significantly just by their presence. So this is based on very ancient traditions. Dr. Ed Tick talks about it in his book, War on the Soul, and his new one is The Warrior Returns, I believe. And Pete and I have worked with him and been actually on a couple of healing journeys back to Vietnam reconciliation journeys. So what followed with that was that as I met Peter at a workshop on PTSD, we were partners in that workshop. And a humorous thing I'll let him talk about. But at any rate, he shot me in the knee. So anyway, we were partners in this process. But we began to work together on deepening this journey of the soul to especially incorporate the moral responsibility of civilians and to recognize the journey had to be done together. That in other words, just you aren't treating veterans. We don't treat them. This is a journey of equals, and we need them and their wisdom and their experience. There's no one who knows how to self-sacrifice more than our vets. Mm-hmm. There's no one who knows how to work together as a team better than our vets. Right. They've been trained for this.
Right.
So we need those skills brought back into our society, okay? And I think that's probably evident today.
And Peter, you know, there's been evidence and a lot of writings about the fact that in World War II, the Korean War, when the vets came back, the incidence of PTSD or the trauma of reentry just didn't exist like we saw for Vietnam in particular, and now also for Afghanistan, Iraq. You know, can you talk a little bit about the disparity there?
Quite frankly, I think it's a false disparity.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, I do.
Yes, it is.
I fully believe that our veterans, anybody who fights in any war, is affected and distorted by their experience. And the disparity that I think you're referencing, Chris, is how the society normalized behavior of the returning veteran.
Yes.
So if the society says it's okay for the men, and I'm going to say men because back in that day it was largely men, although the women who served in any capacity were also deeply affected by this. But for right now, let me confine myself to the male soldiers coming back from World War II, World War I. For the society to say that it's okay for these men to be absent from their homes,
mm-hmm.
it's okay for these men to be drinking heavily,
mm-hmm.
it's okay for these men to be violent with their wives or their children, that this was not outside the pale. It was not thought of as behavior or conduct outside the pale.
So it was accepted.
No one was naming it. Yeah, one was naming it.
Uh-huh. So really, the behavior existed. We just weren't, there wasn't a recognition of it at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The term soldier's heart, which is the term Ed Tick used to name his group, is a term that was developed during the Civil War to describe soldiers who had post-traumatic soul disorder.
And it was called Soldier's
Heart.
Mm-hmm. We called it in World War II battle fatigue or, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it's all the same.
I'd like to turn to the two veterans and ask them, Bob and Pete, what do you guys think of what I just said?
Well, I'll respond, Peter. I think...
And this is Pete or Bob talking.
PTSD really didn't make it into the psychiatric manuals as a diagnosis, if you will, until 1980, 5 years after the fall of Saigon. And you have the 2.5 million service people who served in Vietnam from the United States coming home to a population that was pretty unhappy with that war, and they really didn't come back into a welcoming society, as you alluded to. But I think the other thing was different between prior wars and the Vietnam War was in World War II, Korea, World War I, units rotated in and out as units. So there was a built-in support system of your buddies when you came home as a group. Vietnam, we rotated in and out as individuals. The units stayed there largely for the whole run of the time. So you came back to a society that was unhappy with your participation and and the government's participation in that war, but also you didn't have your buddies around to decompress
with. You were
vulnerable. So it was an awful lot of Vietnam veterans just withdrew, concentrated on building lives, and didn't deal with those issues for decades.
Now, while the military has wisely changed their policy, now they rotate units in and out, their unit cohesion is a very important factor, it still hasn't totally addressed the issue of wounding, soul wounds, if you wish, that occur in a combat zone or in the course of being exposed to very intensive training. So while many veteran or many soldiers come back from deployment with their fellows, they've also lost folks, wounded and killed. And when they do come back, if they are mustered out of the service, then they're confronted with an issue of not being able to have any support network around them to assist in their re-adaptation to society. And that is the weakness that we see is the greatest weakness. Well, you know, while we do say, and everybody does say to folks in camouflage when they see them, thank you for your service, it rings a little hollow because it's not adequate, and we've recognized that increasingly so.
If you just joined us, you're listening to Central Coast Voices here on KCBX, your public radio station. And we're talking about A Way Back Home, a program provided by Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans that offers guided journey of reckoning and reconciliation between veterans and civilians. My guests are I keep wanting to make you a doctor. Father
doctor
Michael Cicinato. There you go. Chaplain for Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans and Healing Journey Coordinator, co-author and therapist Peter Steinberg, who is in private practice and joining us from Chicago by phone, and Pete Pepper, director of Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans, and Bob Denny, who is a veteran participant in the program. If you have a question or comment, you're invited to join our discussion. All you need to do is call us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. So as we're talking about that overview, and you're talking, Father Mike, about the soul.
Yes.
You know, really looking at it's not just something that's physically happening. What I'm getting from what you were stating also is the training itself, we're not just talking about this having an impact on someone who has actively been deployed in a war.
Right.
You know, I mean, we could talk about somebody who's been through training.
Yeah, the training itself does this of necessity to make a good soldier, to make a soldier safe to defend themselves and his people and do battle. This training happens, and now our training is the most efficient in history.
What does that mean, the most efficient?
It's the most efficient in training a soldier. Well, we used to talk about kill rates. I think in the Civil War, the kill rate of a rifleman was 14.5%. And I think World War II was about 43-45%. By Korea, it was 65%. Vietnam, it got to 98-100%. It's been that ever since. And it's due to the training. In the training, you have to train this person to separate their humanity so they can kill and to dehumanize the enemy. Those are essential pieces, and we use some incredible tools, including some of those violent video games that I hate seeing kids play. But the other thing that lets you know that this is happening is that the suicide rate now of non-combat veterans in active duty is higher than the combat veterans.
Yes.
And so that's telling you something. It separates them from relationship with family and others to bind them in a relationship with their warrior community, soldier community. And so the struggle is with their families, and the families trying to understand, husbands and wives that want to be reconnected, children, all of these things. And so this definitely affects it. And I say it's a soul wound, and a lot of soldiers tell me, okay, I'm a Catholic priest. What we do is non-sectarian. Spirituality is something common to everybody, and I've had many a soldier say, well, Father, you know, I believe in my spirituality, my soul work, but I don't believe in a particular religion. And I say, that's fine. We can I can work with that, you know. because it is, that is where this wound is. It's a shredding of our humanity. That's when we talked about the contracts, social covenantal contracts, spiritual contracts. It's there. It's a shredding of relationship. We feel, many veterans talk about, well, you know, God shouldn't, God, how did God allow this? Where was God when this happened? Mm-hmm. We deal with that in the process. We deal with the question, the God question, which we can call the existential question. And but we address it in a non-sectarian way, and we don't claim to have an answer for it. We simply walk a journey of asking the question and working through it, okay? So these are things that we have found to be very effective in helping people to come back. And the fact that they recognize they are not alone in their question, then they've not been abandoned. And so that for us is a real critical piece. And when we deal with it that way, there is healing. Now, we don't claim to totally heal everybody. We start a journey and a process, because right. life, I think, is a journey of healing for us. But we start a journey and a process of healing, and it is very effective, even almost immediately in some of the ways that they're there. And, you know, Bob and Pete both have attended the thing and could tell you probably examples of that, as could Peter, who was there. Peter, we put it on together.
Peter,
can I give an example or two of how the kill rates got changed? Just so everybody can understand that.
Sure.
Here I'm referencing the work of Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman, who wrote On Combat and On Killing. And I'm also referencing the work of Jonathan Shea, M.D., who has spent his career working with Vietnam vets for the VA. Used to be that when people went through basic training and learned how to shoot, they shot at a target, mm-hmm. The target that most people visualize in their mind with concentric circles going out, and you try to hit the bullseye. In order to increase the kill rate, the target was changed to look like a person. To break down the barrier that exists in almost all of us to not shoot another member of our species. Now, once that gets broken, the person who is now able to fire well at that human-looking target has undergone a distortion of their character. That's how Jonathan Shea speaks about it. That's the moral injury he speaks about. And a distortion of their capacities as a person who's a regular participant in the society. To reference something that we talked about earlier, we civilians tend to leave our military hanging out there in that strange land that we ask them to go into. And we do not open the door to bring them back in and say, even though you have trained at our request to be able to kill, we still recognize you as one of us. We want to know what happened to you. We want to know what you saw and heard and did. You did that for us. You do not carry that by yourself. We carry that right beside you because we asked you to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And there is, you know, as you're speaking, I mean, there's really a threshold that gets crossed. And how do you unknow that?
You don't.
Yeah.
You never unknow it. And please hear Bob and Pete. I'd love to hear you guys weigh in on this. But from my point of view, everything I understand, it's never. You never go back to how you once were.
Oh, that's really, really true. Look at the age of people that serve in the military. Great percentage of them in Vietnam were 19, 20, 21 years old. I was turned 21 and after my at the end of my tour. So those are formative years. So what happens in those years stays with you and affects you your entire life, and you almost need this is sort of a deprogramming, if you will, to reintegrate into society. Only, you know, despite what we're talking about killing and court issues and so forth, only half of 1% of Vietnam veterans ever got into the legal system. Were either jailed. So that's not as, although that's an issue, it's not, in my mind, the biggest issue. The biggest issue is the effects of that situation and that programming on all our relationships for the balance of our lives.
Yeah.
And that's what's really, really critical.
Well, and it seems from what you're speaking to, Peter, the return, starting with the Vietnam vets, was so unwelcoming and so unpermitting and unwilling to share any of that responsibility. The isolation is inevitable.
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah. Peter, I would totally agree with that assessment. I think that what I think we've discovered over time is that we do everything we can to devise a method of getting out of that pocket that we've been placed in as a result of our service. And this retreat is an effort to kind of open a door to that, to open a door wide enough for the veterans to see that there's a possibility and to have a witness who is there to say, yes, I understand and I will not judge. One of the things that I've done is I've gone back to Vietnam many times, and I've met with my enemy many times, and it has proved to be a great benefit to me and to my enemy, as a matter of fact. It's the greatest incongruity I can imagine, walking down a street and being stopped by this guy that I would have killed and catching somebody else and he explaining in Vietnamese that, hey, look at us now. This is what we used to, this is what we wanted to do before, but now we're great friends. We can't all do that,
right?
But it's what Father Mike and Peter Sternberg have put together is an opportunity to open the door to the possibility, and I think it is tremendous.
Well, and to reframe that experience so that you're not just left with a single dimension.
Yes.
Of something, being able to go back and view it from a different angle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not a representative sample.
Right. Yeah.
It is the actual guy.
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of weird, actually, the first time it happened.
Yeah. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important for us as civilians. We need to own the killing. We need to own the side effects of the killing, okay, the collateral damage and the wounding to our soldiers and to everything. We need as a civilian society to own that, and I think that is a big lack in our society. We don't like to own responsibility for anything. It's always we want to blame somebody else's fault. I think the turnaround morally for us has to be this, and I think that we've been able to prove in the process that it works, mm-hmm. okay? And, I'm a pacifist. I've been that all my life, okay? But I'm working with vets, and it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life. It's the greatest honor to be able to walk a journey with vets and to be trusted by them. They trust me now. Mm-hmm. They do tell me their stories, and that is an honor, and mm-hmm. that is respect. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I really want to add to this is for our soldiers, respect is key. And that's what our society has not done enough of, respect them and for what they've done. We found that in the treatment court. All the people now in our treatment court are all, they're veterans or have veteran experience, and they understand, okay, yeah, you can draw a hard line with somebody going through the treatment court. They have to do this. But if you respect them, they'll go the whole way with you. And it's incredible to see. But so that respect is huge, and that's what we start with. Without that, none of the processes can work. So we try very early on in the process. We create the respect and the understanding and the trust. And then the journey can happen.
I'm Chris Kington-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX-FM, Central Coast's radio public radio station from Salinas to Ventura and around the world at www.kcbx.org. If you're just joining us and you want to hear today's show in its entirety, we will be available on our website at http://kcbx.org and go to Programs and Central Coast Voices. The show will be available starting tomorrow. My guests today are Father Michael Cicinato, chaplain for Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans, and co-author of Healing Journey Veterans, and Peter Stenberg has joined us from Chicago, where he's in private practice as a psychotherapist. Pete Pepper is the director for the Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans, and Bob Denny is a veteran participant who's also here. We're talking about A Way Back Home, a program that provides a guided journey of reckoning and reconciliation between veterans and civilians, and the healing of moral and ethical injury associated with post-traumatic soul distress, as Father Mike has pointed out. We, if you are interested in making a comment or asking a question of today's guest, you can call us at 781-3875. And I lost Bobby. So, Bobby, if you're still there and you want to call back in, please do. And again, the phone number is 781-3875. So let's talk a little bit about putting this program together, what it looks like, and you bring civilians mm-hmm. and veterans together.
Yes. The journey is a four-day journey, okay. And it's absolutely necessary that each piece of the journey be made. There's a beginning in the introduction where we start to build the relationships and to build the trust and the respect. And we, because we are dealing with things that are so deeply a part of the soul, we need to go through the whole journey so that nothing gets left open and then no wounds get opened up that are left open or aren't resolved and worked with. So it's a very intensive four-day process.
Is this a retreat so that individuals are away for 4 days?
Yes. Well, okay. We don't like using the word retreat. Veterans don't like that. So okay. That's why we call it the Healing Journey. But we use a retreat center. And, you know, and it is.
The veterans are glaring at me.
Yeah,
here.
It is. We need a space that is safe, that has lots of nature, that has good food. We found the place with some of the best food. So there's time for process. So we do these intensive pieces in the program, then we need space and time for things to work and for people to be together and to watch each other's. But we're constantly, the team's job is to watch what's going on with the vets and so forth so that they are safe and so that nothing goes wrong. And occasionally a civilian who might want to do their own agenda, we are very strict about that, okay? So we provide this safe space, and then we do this process in the journey that's developmental for the healing. And ends, you know, one of the interesting things when we do the introductions at the beginning, we use some Native American traditions for it, and the introductions, and I think our introduction at the beginning took about a half hour. Okay, at the end, an hour and a half later, we were supposed to be getting to lunch, and it was still going on. So it tells you how the relationships get built,
yeah.
And it's on those relationships that the healing and the trust can develop. And it helped, for the civilians, it helped several of them understand their fathers or brothers or sisters mm-hmm. that have been exposed, so as well as some of them who were husbands and wives mm-hmm. there. So we had wives of vets there, too.
How many people do you bring together in this journey?
I want to bring a maximum of 25.
Okay.
And I do have openings for this next one, so I want to put that plug in for
okay.
April 17th.
For veterans.
For veterans. Right now I filled up my max on the civilians, but I have places for veterans and some sponsorship. We look for sponsorship. My dream would be every veteran has paid a debt. I'd love to give this to them for free. But it costs us money to do it, so
sure.
Right now that's what we do. But we try to provide. We have some sponsorships. And so that journey's coming up.
And that journey starts on
April 17th and goes through the 21st.
And you talk about rituals.
Yes.
And traditions.
Yes.
And there are a lot of rituals that are associated with the military.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, if you didn't have a ritual life before you got in to the service, you develop that or you wash out.
Yeah.
So really important. I can
see
that's
exactly
connection.
One of the reasons why it really works.
Yeah.
But also ritual that's done appropriately.
Yes.
Ritual requires safe space, requires real coordination.
And kind ritual.
Yes. And we adapt them. Some of them are Native American. I went back and talked to the Maori about their rituals for soldiers reentering. They talk about reconnecting, which is exactly what we're talking about.
Well, and when you talk about, you know, citizens and soldiers, like the warriors coming back and reconnecting, there was a sense in what I've read of when the warriors came back and told their stories, the rest of their people felt those stories and shared in the pain, shared in the experience, shared in the responsibility of what took place, and didn't hold that warrior as doing anything outside of the community.
It was all a communal responsibility for everything, and the warrior was a part of it.
I'm going to take a call here from Bill. Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
I had a comment. I haven't heard your whole program, and I don't know if anyone else has mentioned this or not, but every Veterans Day, especially, people come up to me, I'm a Vietnam vet, and they say, oh, I want to thank you for your service, and I tell them, you know, I would prefer an apology for where you sent me and rather than your thanks. And it kind of catches them off guard.
I'll bet.
And all the veterans that I've ever talked to, I've posed a question to them, too. Would you prefer an apology or thanks?
Hmm.
And almost every one of them say, you know, I would prefer an apology. And the problem is, though, that most of the people whose apology would mean anything are dead now.
Hmm.
From my mother's generation, they're all in their 90s and stuff. And my grandparents' generation, they're all dead. And but I think that would hold for Iraq veterans, you know, for people to say, you know, we really sent you off to do something stupid. We're really sorry for it.
Yeah.
But anyway, you could talk about that.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
If it helps, Bill, from this civilian, I'm the only civilian on this group and our team, but I do apologize and ask forgiveness for what we asked you to do and the failure to support you in these things. I do own that as a serious responsibility, and I would like to do that in the name of our nation if I could, because that's how it really should be coming.
Yeah.
But I do offer that. I know when I first found out that vets kind of reacted to this, thank you for your service, I really thought, I said, well, what did you hear? And this is what Pete, you can verify for this if I'm not right, but said, I heard, thank you for your service. I don't know want to know what you did. I don't want my kids knowing what you did. Now I've done my duty and I'm out of here.
Right.
And that's kind of how it came across.
And I didn't have to send my son or daughter.
And I didn't have to send my son or daughter. Yeah. And so what I've been sharing with sometimes with civilians is when you thank somebody for their service, if you're going to be really sincere, look them right in the eye, shake their hand if they can, thank them for your service and say, you know, I don't know what you had to do for me and for my children, you know, what you had to sacrifice and do, but I am very grateful for that. And if there's any way I can walk a journey with you in this journey back home, please let me know that.
Mm-hmm.
Be that sincere and willing to do that. Because, again, the sincerity piece is just, it's too easy to say, and then I've done my duty, and I feel better about myself now, and I don't worry anymore about this.
I think that's a really important point. Mm-hmm. Bob, did you want to speak to that?
I think it's been a number of years now that we've had an all-volunteer military, and so those folks that are putting themselves in harm's way and are there because they have chosen to do that. I didn't realize until I looked back through some numbers this morning that, as unpopular as the Vietnam War was, two-thirds of the people that served there were volunteers as well.
Yes.
And so I think it's important that this really is an avenue of service for people, but it's of its nature distorting. And the more we're not going to get away from war as much as we would like to see it go away entirely. It's part of what happens in this world. There's going to be crazy despots continue to pop up. But what we have to do is, this program is emblematic of, is deal with those returning combat veterans in a way that allows them to reintegrate into society. They don't normally want to. The guys that I've met coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and the women and those of us from Vietnam, just wanted to get back to family and jobs and life and forget all that stuff. And then these ghosts pop up decades later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't need an apology. I wasn't forced to go. I wasn't drafted. I was afraid it would be over before I got there. And it wasn't, by a long shot. But the issue is that when you come back, regardless of how you might have been compelled or volunteered to go, as the latest generation is, we need to recognize that something was done. And it occurred to me that there are probably some people who are listening who go like, well, I didn't send you there. I didn't agree with the war. Wars.
I was opposed to it to begin with. Sure.
So why should I apologize for that?
Right.
And I get that. I get that part.
But the apology isn't about the war, is it?
No.
No, it's about the human being.
It's about what you did, what you did in our name. And even if you disagreed with what our name was and what the objective was, if any, the point of fact is that you did it. You did it. And we have an obligation, and they have a right to be welcomed back properly.
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to.
Peter, did you want to add anything to that?
Sure, I'm always ready to add. the key point for me is the splitting that takes place. This is the moral wound that the person in the military experiences. But here I would like to emphasize that the civilian population in our country as a whole suffers from this experience. We suffer from the experience of splitting. Anytime as an individual or a group, we are able to speak about the other and make somebody the other and somehow sanitize ourselves, purify ourselves, or raise ourselves up as being better than, because there is another, we harm ourselves. This is an act of harm. It resonates in us as individuals, I believe. It resonates within our group and injures the foundations of our coming together as a group, whether that's a small group or whether it's a group as large as a country. And it is the civilians, as well as the veterans, who experience a healing on this healing journey that we've been speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we can take steps to resolve the split that we've been living and be more honest and integrated as individuals and as a group.
Yeah.
I want to piggyback on that a little because I think it's right. I've developed a whole new philosophy of how I think things ought to be in our nation like everybody else. I believe there ought to be a universal draft of service, of at least 2 years of service for every person in our nation. Now, it could be military service, it could be civilian service, it could be, but of service. First of all, to understand I have a responsibility to my country. I'm not just about me, myself, and I, my selfish self. So I have a part in this nation, and whether I agree with what all the political things are determined to be or how they're doing, I vote, I have a participation and responsibility. And I think if we did that, we would see a massive change in our nation from this separation between our vets and civilians, between others. I think we would see a lot more unity and understanding. I think we would see a lot more good. And the other thing, just my personal little political opinion, I don't think we ought to elect anybody to office who's not a veteran because they don't get it. They don't understand. You know, they've served. They know. But at any rate, I think that we need to, as a nation, each of us own. I don't agree with everything that goes on. I was a pacifist. I disagreed with the war. But, you know, the guys that went, I loved them, and I knew them, and they were my buddies and my friends. So I have a responsibility.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And we have a call from Craig. Craig, are you there?
Yes.
Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, on the question of thank you for your service.
Yes. Did that resonate with you?
Oh, it caused me deep pain. You know, it's like saying thank you for going beating people in going to a third world country to beautiful people and beating them up and raping them. I mean, these aren't wars. You can't just keep saying the word war. These aren't wars. We haven't declared war on anybody since World War II. These are occupations, third world occupations. And all we do is go beat people up. And how do you thank somebody for that? My first response is, oh, yes, thank you. You're welcome. You know what? We need more taxes for more war, for more science. Hi, keep your shoes on.
Yeah.
Craig, are you a veteran?
Yes, and it is the mine, F-U-C-K. It's what really twists you. Even when it comes from another vet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the denial. It's American denial.
Yeah.
May I offer a comment?
Please, Peter.
Greg?
Yes.
One of the things that we strive to do in the 4 days of the journey is to create a safe space so that the stories, the lived experience, some of the lived experiences that you just alluded to, get spoken out loud and are heard and are accepted by veterans and civilians alike. So without moving on to whether or not that person did right or wrong, good or bad, did something that justifies or is worthy of thanks or praise, none of that, no judgment, no criticism, no analysis, no diagnosis takes place. What happens, what we strive for anyway, is openness and acceptance. That that person can say what they lived through and finally feel heard as a fellow human. And although the journey is not taking place right now, I'm extend that to you right here in this phone call.
Well, thank you. And I feel it's difficult for vets to really... I don't feel responsible for what I did. They made me do it. And it's real hard for... I think vets should be talking more about this. I wish vets were really talking about what they were made to do more. That's my point, I guess.
Hey, it sounds like you ought to come on the retreat.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to, yes.
I'll tell you what. You have a pen? You have a pen and pencil?
Just one. Okay.
Call me, 707-217-8657. This is Pete Pepper, and we'll arrange having you come to the retreat.
What's the last name, Pete?
Pepper, like salt and pepper, or Dr. Pepper.
Okay,
or Sergeant
I'll give
Pepper.
A call.
Or Sergeant Pepper.
Or Sergeant Pepper.
That was a sergeant one time.
Well, I certainly appreciate what you're doing.
Okay, encourage you to make that call, Craig.
Yep.
And okay, thank you for calling us.
Yeah. Oh, and I want to say one more thing. The VA, I have been through therapy with the VA, and I'm really amazed at how well the VA is operating these days. 15 years ago, they wouldn't even look at me, but it's a whole new ballgame.
They're doing it. Yeah, they're doing a great job in most places. But look forward to talking to you, guy.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Bye, Craig.
Bob had something he wanted to add.
I just wanted to add, and I think Craig's call really made me think about it. One of the things that I am doing at this stage in my life, and the point I wanted to make across here, was to sort of be an evangelist, if you will, for people that are just coming out of Iraq or Afghanistan or even Vietnam vets who've not sought help for all these decades, that there's a tremendous amount of help that's out there. I've been the beneficiary of it for 10 years, and it's changed my life. But an awful lot of people don't want to seek it, don't think they need it. They've got this macho thing coming out of the service, and you owe it to your families, your loved ones.
Yourself.
And yourself, for certainly, to avail yourself of what's there.
What?
We as civilians need for you to do this. It is one more request we are making of you. This is Peter Sternberg speaking this. Mm-hmm. This is one more request we're making of you. We need for you to do this. We need for you to help us as a society heal. We need for you to help us take our responsibility. And we need you as elder warriors.
Yes. That's beautifully put, Peter.
Yeah. Well, actually, on the whole purpose of the retreat, really, when you think about the retreat, we're obviously trying to work a healing journey for all of us. But I think that the vets provide the largest part of the healing for us civilians in that journey, and we didn't even know we needed it.
Can you talk a little bit about the results? You said that you've had one retreat so far. You've had one journey so far. And what did you see happen with that? What kind of outcome did you see with that?
What we saw, I thought I had it down here. We saw several things happen. One, we saw relationship reestablished and connections reestablished and real. We saw healing, people being able to talk to each other. We saw people sleeping for the first time for the full night. We saw people who had been wrestling with anger issues moving past those. We saw understanding. Of all of the responses on the retreat we got, all the veterans' responses were extremely positive, and I did put them on our website. I have a website called www.elderwarrior.com, and we put those responses there. And so we did experience, people shared that with us, and we watched, we had several people from the court in the journey, and who are, you know, on probation and so forth, and we worked that, and it was a very powerful experience for some of them. And what happened when they came back was all the people in the court, including the judge, noticed a change. And we had one guy get hit really hard with some really tough situations when he came back that totally sideblinded him and did not react with anger, did not react by going to the alcohol, did not react by going to the drugs or violence or any of that. In fact, moved with it very powerfully. So I know we've got something that's powerful, you know, with each person. It's an individual journey, so they're going to experience it on that level. And for some, there's some will be coming back on this journey, I think, wanting to do more. But we did experience some major things in the court, and the judge, Judge Trice, and the others commented on, wow, something's changed here, because we'd been through a couple of them with a roller coaster ride of struggling with all of this. They're in and out with the stuff. And this time they came back and they did not react.
Yeah, Bob and I were both participants. Yeah. I was working with the father, so I was involved more in helping him put it on. But Bob, Vietnam veteran, helicopter pilot, Bob, why don't you tell us what you got out of it?
I went actually not really expecting a great deal, because I figured I was pretty far along on my journey of healing, if you will, but I wanted to kind of retouch with spirituality. And it actually ended up being a very, very cathartic experience for me. I've carried for 46 years guilt over things that I was involved with in Vietnam, moral injury types of things. And it was only through this process, hearing the stories of others like Pete and some of the other people that were in the program who were Vietnam veterans as well, that we share these intimate stories, that a real healing did occur as a result of that. Hey, I'm not the only one carrying this kind of thing around. We all shared this. I didn't even get together with a group of Vietnam veterans that were six of them in one room for 47 years until this event occurred. So it was a marvelous period of growth for me, and it's still continuing as a result.
Were you both able to articulate in front of people that you normally would not have been willing to share happened for the first time?
For the first time, and I only was able to because Pete shared his story first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he opened up so eloquently about it, and it brought up emotions in me that I was willing to stand up in front of a group of 25 people and share my greatest nightmare. Yeah. And so it was really incredible.
And it's not as though those things weren't there with you unspoken.
Right.
They were things that you just hadn't felt comfortable talking with anybody about. Yeah. What was the shift in this for you, Pete, to be able to speak?
Well, I wanted to be able to talk to the other veterans, you know, the generational.
The younger veterans?
Yeah, younger as well as those from my own time. And I wanted to be able to tell them something that I hadn't told others before. Mm-hmm. And so it was just an opportunity in an environment where I knew that even though I was telling something, I mean, I think people would have an idea in their head, oh, they're telling awful things, you know, about killing. And this, my story was about the prospect that I'd be a coward.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's a hard thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think it was an environment where I could be free with that, you know. And I think that makes a tremendous difference.
We have just about 2 minutes, so I want to wrap up. But we just got a notice that somebody called in and said they wanted to sponsor a veteran financially to go through this program.
Okay, they can give me a call or Pete a call, and then they can call me at 805-316-0212.
Okay.
Or you can contact us through the Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans, and we have a P.O. box, but a call is probably better, and we would be very happy. Somebody just called to do that. We're very grateful. I believe every veteran ought to be able to do this for free, and that's my dream, so we will. I'll be glad to do that. So you can call me at that number or the number Pete gave. Mm-hmm. Either one of us can help you with that.
I want to thank my guests today, Father Michael Cecinato, Peter Sternberg, who's joined us from Chicago, Pete Pepper, and Bob Denny, and everybody who called in with their comments and questions. We've been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. You've been listening to a program about A Way Back Home and Central Coast Veterans Helping Veterans. Look them up on the web and give them your support. And thank you very much for joining us today on Central Coast Voices.
They want to know more about the retreat.
Thank you.
www.elderwarrior.com is a retreat.
And about the retreat, you can also, I was just told, go to www.elderwarrior.com.
Peter's still lit up, but not.
Hi.
Oh, there
Hi,
you go.
Hi, there you
all
are.
Right.
Sorry, I had to cut him off. So that
That's, I got it.
I didn't even try talking to him.
Uh-oh, so got well. Your number, Peter.
Yeah. They,
well, that didn't take long.
Thank you so much. We could do a series of shows on this topic. You guys presented it very well, and I think, you know, the gentleman that called in, you know, just absolutely wonderful for you to give him that. So what is the cost of?
It's $600 for a single room and $500 for a shared room.
Shared room.
And the food's extraordinary. Believe it or not.
It is.
The former chef for Merv Griffin is the chef at the retreat house.
Really? Where's the retreat house?
St. Francis Retreat House in San Juan Bautista.
Oh, my goodness. It's a beautiful place.
It's a beautiful place. Oh. It's the ideal place because it's got nature.
Yeah.
It's a walk. The rooms have bathrooms.
It's got, history.
It's and it's a beautiful area to create the safe circle and space.
Yeah.
Incredible support. They are anxious to help support with us. They want to do more of these. They'd like to do several of these a year. And we're just new, so we're just getting the word out. But as the word gets out, we'll do more. But, if there's any opportunity to do more sharing like this, we're happy to do it.
Absolutely. I think to talk to veterans, to be able to express to veterans the understanding that you have about, and certainly personal understanding that you guys have, about something that's so unspoken and just so absolutely controlling of our lives, of your lives, is a real opportunity. So we'd love to be able to provide that.
There's all these different things that are elephants in the room.
Yeah.
Not being able to speak the story.
Yeah.
Not being able to do with.